The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Joanna LaForgia from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading from the September 2025 issue of Southern Living Magazine. This week, we're going to get Mr. Southern Living's Super Southern Pecan Dessert recipe for just in time for football season, as it says here. And then we'll visit the Grumpy Gardener. And then, if we've got time, talk about what Southerners are buzzing about. And this month, it is the Appalachian Trail. All right? Are you ready? We started this article in our last episode. It is Mr. Southern Living's Ready for Game Day, the Today Show anchor, kicks off the season with this super southern dessert. And that is, of course, Craig Melvin. For Craig Melvin, it's not a real tailgate without a little competition. You need to have fans from both teams. There's got to be trash talking, he says. You can't engage in that if everyone's for the same squad. He roots for the Gamecocks, a native of Columbia, home to the University of South Carolina. His devotion only deepened when he returned to the area for his first post-grad news gig after attending Wofford College in Spartanburg. My house was in the Rosewood neighborhood, within walking distance of Williams-Brice Stadium. I spent many Saturdays tailgating there, he says. But whether you're celebrating on campus or watching in the living room, Craig maintains that a game day gathering hinges on the menu. You've got to have fried chicken from either Bojangles, or Bojangles, he says. There should be plenty of libations, like beer and bourbon, plus non-alcoholic options, too. If my mom's there, you've got to have the kind of sweet tea where the sugar congeals at the bottom of the plastic container that's been in your family for roughly 40 years, he adds. You can also count on desserts like these pretzel crust bourbon pecan bites. They combine my favorite pie with my favorite beverage, says Craig. And when it comes to his pronunciation of that ever-polarizing nut, the Palmetto State native remains loyal to the way he's always said it. I say pecan. Why do we have to conform, he asks. All right then, listeners, we'll say pecan since it's his recipe. Here is the recipe for one bite pretzel crust bourbon pecan pies. Active time for this is 30 minutes, and it takes a total of 1 hour and 35 minutes to prepare. And this makes 24. Here are the ingredients. For the pretzel crust, we'll need 1 1/4 cups of finely crushed pretzel crumbs from 4 cups of pretzel twists, 6 tablespoons of unsalted butter, melted, 1/4 cup of packed light brown sugar. That's the crust. And here are the ingredients for the filling. 1/4 cup of unsalted butter, 6 tablespoons of light brown sugar, 2 tablespoons of light corn syrup, 1 tablespoon of bourbon, 1/2 teaspoon of vanilla extract, 1 large egg, and 1 cup of pecan halves, chopped. And here are the steps. First, prepare the pretzel crust. Preheat the oven to 325 Fahrenheit. Line a 24-cup mini muffin tray using paper liners. Generously coat the liners with cooking spray. 2. Stir together pretzel crumbs, melted butter, and brown sugar in a medium bowl until the mixture is the consistency of wet sand. 3. Spoon a heaping tablespoon, not packed, of the crust mixture into bottom of each paper liner. Using the bottom of a round teaspoon, create an indentation in the center of the crust mixture in each muffin tray well. Set aside. Step 4. Prepare the filling. Cook butter in a small saucepan over medium, stirring often until milk solids have browned 3 to 5 minutes. Transfer brown butter to a medium-sized heat-proof bowl and let cool slightly, about 2 minutes. Whisk in brown sugar, corn syrup, bourbon, and vanilla extract until smooth. Whisk in egg until homogeneous. Stir in chopped pecans. Divide filling evenly among prepared wells, about 1.5 teaspoons in each. And 5, bake 12 to 15 minutes until edges are golden brown and filling is set. Cool in tray about 5 minutes. Remove pies from the tray and let cool completely on a wire rack about 45 minutes. Looks good. And they're pictured here, listeners, in their little paper muffin cups, bite size, and they're golden, the nuts and such. So they look delicious, golden brown. Bourbon, one bite, pretzel crust, bourbon, pecan pies. All right, on to our Grumpy Gardener. And listeners, this feature, as you probably know, always begins with a cartoon. And it takes up almost about a quarter of a page. And this one appears to be taking place in a superstore of some sort. Tall shelves all packed. And then there's a pallet filled with some other tubes, things we can't quite discern what the things are, bags, boxes, and such. But in the foreground, we have a man. He is bald with some white hair and glasses, and he's wearing a green shirt and a red long apron, such that a lot of superstore workers wear, has on blue trousers and brown shoes. And there's a woman speaking with him. She has gray hair. They are facing each other. She's wearing a blue shirt and light tan slacks, and she's also wearing brown shoes. And here is what she's saying in the caption. She is saying to the store worker, "I asked to see a pecan. Why are we in the plumbing department?" Okay, here begins At Home with the Grumpy Gardener by Steve Bender. Dear Grumpy, I recently moved from Ohio to South Carolina and want to grow a pecan tree. But when I went to the Home and Garden Center and asked about one, they all looked at me like I was loony and told me they didn't sell any pecans, only pecans. Is this some weirdo regional dialect? And that signed Pete. The answer to Pete is, it may be regional, Pete, but it isn't weird at all. That's just how distinguished, classy, sophisticated Southerners talk. Pecans conjures images of elegant ladies dressed in silk, linen, crepe, and pearls sitting for afternoon tea beneath a massive live oak. Pecans evokes appliance salesmen decked out in plaid jackets and spectator shoes. Now that you're one of us, you'll have to adapt. I do hope you got your pecan tree, though. Give it a sunny spot and lots of room, because it will get big. Crabgrass control. Crabgrass. I missed my opportunity to apply a pre-emergence herbicide this spring, and it's taking over my lawn. I've tried a crabgrass killer, but it still looks healthy. What's the best thing to do? Signed, Becky. What weed killer did you put down? Old Bay? That never works, though the crabgrass smells delicious. I would let it be. Just mow it until it dies with the first fall frost. But prevention next spring is key. When shrubs like Forsythia, Spiraea, and flowering quince bloom, put down a granular weed preventer like Scott's Halts, according to the label direction. This keeps crabgrass and similar weeds from germinating. Then, encourage your lawn to fill in the spots formerly occupied by crabgrass by fertilizing it in spring and mowing it to no lower than 1.5 inches. Do this for 2 years in a row, and your plague will vanish. Saving Miss Sandra. I've had two Miss Sandra crepe myrtles in the ground for 2 to 3 years. I promise not to commit crepe murder, but I do want them to have multiple beautiful trunks. How do I choose the growth to remove, and when do I do this? Signed, Gina. You have excellent taste. Miss Sandra is a gorgeous purple crepe myrtle in our Southern Living plant collection that grows 15 to 20 feet tall. One of the main reasons that people commit crepe murder, hacking them into thick, ugly stumps every spring, is planting them where they get too big and eventually block windows and hide porches. Make sure yours won't do that. Next, choose 3 to 5 well-spaced upright trunks and remove the others. Those you've saved will become the main trunks. As they start growing taller, gradually start cutting off any side branches on them up to about 4 feet high. Then just let them go. Unhappy hibiscus. What's happening to my beautiful Chinese hibiscus? It's in its second year here in Wilmington, North Carolina. Each bloom dries up slowly from the center out. No one has been able to help me. And that is signed, Melissa. No one until now, Melissa. I suspect that the culprits are thrips. And listeners, I want to spell that for us. T-H-R-I-P-S. And they are tiny insects that invade the flower buds and eat their way out, ruining the blooms. To control them, pick off all infested flowers and buds and throw them out with the trash. Then treat your plant according to the label directions with a systemic insecticide called Bio-Advanced Tree and Shrub Insect Killer Spray. Much to die for, and die is D-Y-E. Does colored mulch... mulch to die for. Does colored mulch have any negative effect on plants? Signed, Kristen. I don't know that red, green, or black dye will do anything to hurt the flowers and shrubs, but I dislike unnatural coloring and see no need for it. Plants should be the stars in your garden, not mulch. And those are all our letters and Grumpy's Gripe of the Month, which always starts off with a little cartoon of Steve Bender, the grumpy gardener, sitting in his chair, typing in his typewriter with the yellow sheet coming out of the blue typewriter. And that typewriter is set upon an upside-down wheelbarrow, which is serving as his desk. He's typing away in a blue shirt and tan trousers, and the wheelbarrow is red, and there is a smiling flower, a yellow flower with long green leaves, one of which is holding down the page from the typewriter from blowing away, and the other leaf is a long arm that's hugging Grumpy around his neck. Grumpy is looking a bit askance at the flower. He's not terribly impressed. And he has brown hair and glasses and a mustache and beard. And here is Grumpy's gripe of the month. It never ceases to amaze me how many herbal supplements you can buy that contain plant ingredients not tested or approved by the FDA. These products often originate in foreign countries with little regulation. Taking them because some knucklehead on the internet says they're good for what ails you is rolling the dice. For example, comfrey, and that's listener C-O-M-F-R-E-Y, kava, pennyroyal, and chaparral, C-H-A-P-A-R-R-A-L, can cause liver damage. The FDA recently discovered a number of supplements claiming to contain Mexican tejocote, T-E-J-O-C-O-T-E, Mexican tejocote root that featured deadly yellow oleander instead. So ask yourself, is losing your love handles worth losing your life? Grumpy's thumb is pointed down. And finally, there's a right column here about kale. And there's a picture in one of those white Greek urn-looking vases upon a pedestal holding the plants, the kale plants, and they are green with yellow centers or green with purple centers. The kale plant that looks like cabbage and kind of looks like flowers as well. And this is in the Know Your Plants section of the Grumpy Gardener. Kale. It likes the cold. Its foliage is bold, and you can eat it too. Ornamental kale is among the more popular plants for cool weather color. But don't overlook the culinary kind. It also sports gaudy foliage and shrugs off the winter cold, but it's edible, packed with vitamins, fiber, and antioxidants. Kale is yummy in soups, sautés, salads, smoothies, and ice cream. I added that last one to test how many people are actually reading my stuff. It's time to plant, so look for seedlings of the following varieties at garden centers now. Lacinato, a.k.a. dinosaur kale. Call that because of bumpy, steel-blue leaves that resemble dinosaur skin. Red Russian, gray-green leaves with purple veins. Red boar, fringed purple leaves, and winter boar, fringed blue-green leaves. Plant the seedlings in a sunny spot or container with good soil. Frost sweetens the flavor. Harvest the outer leaves first. Signed, Steve Bender, a.k.a. the Grumpy Gardener. And now on to the grapevine, what Southerners are buzzing about. The spotlight is on the Appalachian Trail this month, listeners. Lace up your boots. The Appalachian Trail Conservancy celebrates 100 years of protecting one of the country's best hikes. Although plans for the legendary route started in 1921 and it wasn't completed until 1937, it's the 1925 founding of the Appalachian Trail Conservancy that we have to thank for the longevity, of this groundbreaking footpath. Created to manage and preserve the entire 2,190-mile span of the Appalachian Trail, or AT, from Georgia to Maine, as well as the natural area around it, this organization has a big job to do. After working tirelessly to reopen more than 430 miles that were closed due to damage from Hurricane Helene, the group is taking a moment to toast its centennial and says there's never been a better time to explore. And there's a small photo here, listeners, of a hiker from his back hiking on. This is a stone. There's a lot of stone on this particular branch of the path, of this dirt path. Dirt and stone path. He is flanked by green shrubbery that comes up to his waist and sometimes as high as his chest. Again, we see him from the back. He's wearing a backpack. He's wearing a red t-shirt and khaki-colored shorts and hiking boots. And he's using a hiking stick to walk. And in the background are the Blue Ridge Mountains. He is wearing a red hat, as I said, in a red t-shirt. And his backpack also has a sleeping bag or sleeping pad rolled on it on the bottom. It's a brown backpack. It comes up to his head and starts at his waist with that belted-on rolled pad. And here in the article, listeners, the article surrounds the rest of the page surrounds a map of Georgia, Tennessee, and Virginia. Oh, North Carolina, yeah, Georgia, Tennessee, and North Carolina, and Virginia. It goes up, of course, northeast from Georgia to Virginia. And it's called Jumping Off Points. These communities each make a great home base. Down at the bottom in Georgia, Blairsville, Georgia. We're going to go from the bottom up here, listeners, from the south to the north. Blairsville, Georgia, the Blue Ridge Mountain spot, is near the only covered portion of the trail, which passes through Neal's Gap and is convenient to short sections for casual trekkers. And then we're going to go up to Gatlinburg, Tennessee. Nearly 76 miles of the AT can be found inside Great Smoky Mountains National Park along the Tennessee-North Carolina border. Book a cabin and then set out on a rewarding journey. And just a bit further than that, Hot Springs, North Carolina, traveling northeast. This mountain town is nestled along Spring Creek and the French Broad River, with a host of mineral springs to show for it. The AT runs directly through its vibrant main street. Further northeast, Damascus, Virginia, the intersection of seven nationally known pathways has earned Damascus the title Trail Town USA. Its annual Appalachian Trail Days Festival draws about 25,000 outdoor enthusiasts. And a lot further up in Virginia, we're going to Waynesboro, Virginia. If you want multiple options for exploring, you'll have easy access to the Blue Ridge Parkway, Skyline Drive, Blue Ridge Mountains, and AT, as well as a charming historic downtown. That's in Waynesboro. And then we're going up further, the furthest northeast. And listeners, this is West Virginia, which I looked at of the earlier description. Didn't see this up here. And this town is Harper's Ferry, West Virginia. Be sure to stop by the Appalachian Trail Conservancy Headquarters and Visitor Center, which is located in this scenic settlement that's also a National Historical Park. And we've got time for one more short recipe. This is for snack time. It's a happy hour hero. Bring out a crunchy mix starring bacon and nuts and watch it disappear. This is a recipe for smoky bacon snack mix. The active time is a half hour. And that's also the total time, 30 minutes, and it serves 12. And we've got three bowls of it here with a couple of glasses of beer in the photograph, all golden brown. And the caption of the photo is, mix it up. Use toasted peanuts, cashews, or pecans for a combination of all three instead of the smoked almonds, if you like. Here is the recipe that serves 12. The ingredients are 6 thick-cut bacon slices, a quarter of a cup of unsalted butter melted, a tablespoon of smoked paprika, a tablespoon of Worcestershire sauce, 2 teaspoons of seasoned salt, such as Lawry's, 4 cups of corn cereal squares, such as Corn Chex, and 2 cups of smoked almonds, or cashews or pecans, or all three. Step 1. Preheat the oven to 350. Cook bacon slices in a large skillet over medium heat until crisp, about 8 minutes. Remove the bacon to a paper towel-lined plate and let it cool until ready to use. Pour the bacon drippings into a heat-proof bowl and set aside. 2. Whisk together melted butter, smoked paprika, Worcestershire sauce, seasoned salt, and 3 tablespoons of the warm bacon drippings in a large bowl. Add cereal and toss until well coated. Pour onto a rimmed baking sheet and spread in an even layer. Do not rinse the large bowl. Step 3. Bake the cereal mixture until crispy and dry, about 15 minutes, stirring every 5 minutes. Remove it from the oven and return the cereal mixture to the large bowl. Add the smoked almonds, or pecans, or cashews, or combination of all three, and crumble in the reserved bacon. Toss to combine. And listeners, if you need to return to any of our recipes or anything else you've heard, our broadcasts become a podcast right after the initial broadcast, and you will find them if you go to our website, ncreadingservice.org, and click on the listen page, then click on skip to podcasts, and you'll find Southern Living under the newspaper section, even though it is a magazine, but it's listed there under the newspaper section, Southern Living. And we've run out of time for today's episode of Southern Living. I hope you enjoyed it and hope that you'll listen next time. I'm Joanna LaForgia, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, we'd love to hear from you. Please call us at 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. So long until next time. Thank you.